Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I am John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, May 4th, 2016. The head of the UN peacekeeping mission in South Sudan is calling on the leaders of the country to resolve the pending issues.
The guns simply must be silent. We need to address the urgent humanitarian situation in South Sudan. The transitional government can help to ensure the free movement of humanitarian assistance.
And residents in Wau are saying that they are not seeing any difference in the country, even when Riek Machar is back and sworn in as first vice president.
If there is nothing found against him, let him be released. Let him be released as soon as possible, so that he can also be a part and parcel of the contribution for peace.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A top UN official in South Sudan is calling on the factions of President Salva Kiir and First Vice President Riek Machar to move quickly and resolve their disputes over the number of states in the country and the integration of police force from two sides. UNMISS Chief Ellen Margaret Loy is urging South Sudan's leaders to present clear policies to attract financial aid from international community. Waki Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
Ellen Margaret Loy, the special representative of the United Nations Secretary General in South Sudan, told a news conference in Juba today that the UN and the international community eagerly await the completion of the transitional government of national unity.
It's now incumbent on the transitional government to move with speed to complete the establishment of all the transitional institutions articulated in the peace agreement.
Loy says the United Nations wants the former warring parties to quickly integrate their police forces so they can work together to improve security as required by the August peace agreement. She says the United Nations also expects the partners of the transitional government of unity to quickly take measures to heal and reconcile communities across the country torn apart by the conflict.
The guns simply must be silent. We need to address the urgent humanitarian situation in South Sudan. The transitional government can help to ensure the free movement of humanitarian assistance, including ensuring that roadblocks do not prevent vital supplies from reaching people in need.
Loy also says both Mr. Kiir and Machar should urgently resolve their dispute over the numbers of states in the country. In a unilateral decision, President Kiir split South Sudan's 10 states into 28 after he and Machar signed a peace agreement. Machar's SPLM in opposition strongly disapproved of the move, saying it violated the peace deal. Loy stated unequivocally that the United Nations does not recognize Mr. Kiir's 28 states.
It's very clear that there are challenges around the country in relation to how the borders have been drawn in the 28 states proposal, and that has led to ethnic tensions in many parts of the country. First and foremost, I would say that the situation in what was the former Upper Nile state around Malakal is particularly sensitive, because of the ethnic composition of the population in that area on the east and west bank of the river and in the city of Malakal. So we expect the transitional government urgently to address the issue of 28 states. And in the meantime, we are not formally recognizing the 28 states.
In a communique issued in January, the Intergovernmental Authority on Development, or IGAD, which mediated the talks which led to the agreement, also said it did not recognize Mr. Kiir's 28 states. IGAD called on South Sudan's leaders to resolve the issue after forming the transitional government. The Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, a body which monitors the implementation of the peace agreement, said it does not recognize the 28 states either. Local civil society group Community Empowerment for Progress Organization is also voicing concern over unresolved issues it says hinder the smooth implementation of the peace agreement. Edmond Yakani is the group's executive director.
At national level, please complete the parliamentarian process to form the national parliament. And also we have independent commissions, institutions. So we feel that those independent commissions and institutions at national level requires a speedy completion. But also besides that, we have transitional government at the state level. So we're also calling them that they need to complete the transitional governments at state level, both legislative and executive, and including independent commissions and institutions. So that's the call we're calling.
Loy says it is also critical that South Sudan's leaders address the severe economic hardships affecting the country's citizens. She advised the new government to work with the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund to help turn around the country's devastated economy. She warns that donors will expect to see clear policies and goals from South Sudan's leaders before committing any more financial aid to the country.
I would advise all South Sudanese actors not to ask money up front, but to tell first to the donors and the international community what you intend to do and what your goal and policy is.
Loy says with the turn of the economy, there will be a need for assistance from the international community, but she says donors will want to see concrete actions on the part of the government first. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudo in Juba.
Residents of Wau Town say even though the war has ended and a transitional government of national unity is in place, unarmed civilians accused of being members of the SPLM in opposition are still being killed by government forces. Dimo Silva Aurelio has the story for VOA from Wau.
Citizens across Wau Estate say they were glad to see former rebel leader Riek Machar returned to Juba, hoping his arrival would signal the end of insecurity and economic hardship. But speaking in Arabic, resident Coletta John says that has not happened.
We thought peace has come, but there are a lot of killing as we remain restless.
John says the country's two leaders should move quickly to end the killings and unrest in Wau Estate and Wau County in particular. Lucia Angelo, a resident of Wau's High Kamsin residential area, says it is common to see government soldiers roaming about. She says some soldiers enter public places like bars and restaurants with their guns. Just last Monday, she says, in Arabic, an unidentified gunman shot and killed an armed teenager in her neighborhood.
A boy was killed the day before yesterday and was buried yesterday evening. And last night, there were gunshots. Every day has its own story.
But Wau resident Taban Justo, is speaking in Arabic, says he has seen several positive changes since Machar returned to Juba and was sworn in as the country's first vice president.
After the arrival of Dr. Riek Machar, I have seen changes in commodity prices, but it is only security issues which have not got better. I have personal hope that after his coming and with the formation of the transitional government of national unity, there will be changes.
Wau Estate Governor Elias Waya Nyipoch says it is true that suspected SPLA soldiers have killed innocent unarmed civilians in Wau Town. Nyipoch confirms that four civilians have been shot dead since last week. He says Wau Estate citizens have yet to see the benefits of peace since Machar's arrival in Juba.
It is only us in this state that are mourning.
Governor Nyipoch says government authorities will track down and arrest the killers. SPLA spokesperson Lul Roy Kong says he is not aware of any government soldiers being involved in the killing of innocent civilians.
No, sir, we have not received any formal complaints from civilians through the laid out chain of command from Wau to SPLA General Headquarters. And therefore, we are not going to say anything since we have not received any formal complaint.
Over the past few months, Wau County residents have accused SPLA soldiers of killing civilians and looting their property, which has intensified tensions between the local community and the army. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Wau.
Still in Wau, it was World Press Freedom Day yesterday, and as we reported, South Sudan is way down on the World Press Freedom Index. It's ranked 140 out of 180 countries. Radio Miraya journalist George Livio has been under detention for nearly 2 years now. His family is calling on the Transitional Government of National Unity to free him immediately. In a statement released yesterday, the Union of Journalists in South Sudan said it has documented at least 5 incidents where journalists are targeted this year alone. Michael Atit has more from WOW.
George Livio's father, Livio Gelego Bahara, says since security officials arrested and detained his son almost 2 years ago, the family has been allowed to see him only once. Gelego is calling on security officials to free his son now or charge him with an offense.
I am appealing that if there is nothing found against him, let him be released. Let him be released as soon as possible so that he can also be a part and parcel of the contribution for peace. If there is something against him, let him be investigated and tried.
National Security Service officers arrested Livio in August 2014, and since then, he remained in detention. Gelego says his entire family has been psychologically affected by Livio's detention.
If he has committed any crime at all, he should be charged. His crime should be told to him, and I, as a father, If I see that there is need, I will bring an advocate to defend him. And these are all the legal procedures that should take place concerning somebody who has been arrested. Now, I cannot do anything. I cannot go and bring an advocate. What do I tell him? What is the crime?
The Union of Journalists of South Sudan, officials in WOW, confirms that several reporters were either harassed or detained or forced to flee the area over the past year. Union Chairman Alor Denkur says one journalist was shot in the arm in front of his house. Speaking in Arabic, Kur says the reporter is receiving medical care in WOW. He adds that several other reporters have been harassed or detained.
On 18 February 2016, مراسل راديو ميرايا بواو مايكل ماركو.
On February 18, 2016, Michael Wandi, a Radio Miraya reporter in WOW, escaped gunshots by armed men. And on the 22nd of the same month, while on duty, he was found out he was being followed. This forced him to flee the state. On the 26th of February, Alphonse Ernest Makwe, a journalist working with the state radio in WOW, was shot while at his house. Though he was not on duty, this incident is linked to his work. And on Friday, March the 4th, a journalist with iRadio, James Deng Dimo, was held by the SPLA military intelligence unit in WOW. Up to now, his whereabouts is not known.
Kur says those incidents have had a chilling effect on journalists in WOW. He urges the state authorities to ensure that reporters can work in a conducive environment without fear of reprisal for covering the news.
Media has a big role to play in dissemination of information. And to do this, all journalists, especially those in detention like Miraya, journalist George Livio Bahara, who has been detained for more than 1 year, should be freed.
For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in WOW.
Veteran Sudanese journalists say International Press Freedom Day was a day to reflect on the repressive media environment that is pretty much an everyday occurrence in Sudan. Journalists working in the capital Khartoum say despite the challenges, reporters are determined to work. Nabil Biagio has more from Khartoum.
According to the 2016 World Freedom Index prepared by Reporters Without Borders, Sudan ranks 174th out of 180 countries, making it the seventh worst country for press freedom. In Sudan, national security agents summoned journalists for questioning or shut down the offices of newspapers on a near daily basis. 87-year-old veteran journalist Mahjoub Mohamed Saleh is the founder of Al Ayam, the oldest independent Arabic daily newspaper in Sudan. Mahjoub says press freedoms have been steadily eroding in the northeast African country over the years.
Journalists in the Sudan have been complaining continuously of losing their freedom of expression due to intervention from the security authorities in the country. This is hampering the work of journalism in the Sudan and is affecting negatively the country as a whole.
Local and international observers say Sudanese national security agents often censor newspaper content before a paper goes to print and confiscate published newspapers if the news is not favorable to the government. Last year alone, Sudanese security agents seized the entire print run of 14 different newspapers in one day. The Sudanese government also frequently shuts down newspapers to punish them for publishing articles it doesn't like. But authorities typically offer no explanation for shutting down newspapers. Mahjoub says media outlets want the government to use legal means, including a court of law, if it's unhappy with a particular newspaper's content or radio station's programming. But he says the government rarely responds to journalists' demands for an explanation, and security agents have a free hand to arbitrarily arrest journalists. He says the situation is so bad that sometimes security agents even beat up journalists and get away with it.
Every year we repeatedly speak about this issue, but there is no progress.
Mahjoub, who has worked for decades as a journalist in Sudan through several regimes, says the ongoing mistreatment of journalists is not new in the country. He says former President Jafar Nimeiry also cracked down on press freedoms in the 1970s and 1980s.
By now we know all undemocratic regimes impose their own control on the press to the detriment of the country.
Faisal Mohamed Saleh is another Khartoum-based veteran journalist who trains journalists at his media center, Tiba Press. He says although the future of Sudanese media looks bleak, there was a bit of good news 2 days ago.
The Constitutional Court ruled in favor of Attayar newspaper, which was suspended 5 months ago by the security, NIS, Sudanese Security Service, for almost 5 months. And it took the Constitutional Court 5 months to rule in favor of Attayar. And that the happiest news we have in the last maybe year.
Faisal says International Press Freedom Day provides an opportunity for Sudanese journalists to remember when they enjoyed some actual freedom between 2005 and 2010, when the SPLM and the National Congress Party signed the Comprehensive Peace Agreement and formed the Government of National Unity prior to South Sudan's independence referendum.
The margin of freedom was wider than today, and we enjoyed freedom. It was also not according to international standards. Unfortunately, immediately after the independence of South Sudan, the government came back and put pressure on the media and cracked down on media houses.
Faisal has personally been arrested many times because of his work and was recently banned from traveling outside the country. He says Sudanese journalists will continue to fight repression and censorship as part of a wider struggle for democracy and the rule of law in Sudan.
We still have hope, but the situation of the press is connected with the general situation in the country, the political and legal atmosphere.
Faisal says unless there is some type of political openness and national dialogue that includes all political parties, he does not believe the repressive atmosphere for journalists in Sudan will change anytime soon. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biaju in Khartoum.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, Maridi State creates new counties. That story is coming up next.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what's the most embarrassing thing that's happened to you?
So the most embarrassing thing I've ever experienced in my life was at the time when I experienced my first menstruation period. It was really embarrassing, especially because it happened at school and in class and, you know, being in a mixed school again. So So it was really embarrassing.
The most embarrassing thing that has ever happened to me was when my mom shouted at me in front of my crush.
The most embarrassing thing that happened to me is when I was with my friends. It was back in 2012. My girlfriend, she got annoyed with me and she slapped me in public, so that was so embarrassing to me.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Maridi State Governor Africano Mande has created three new counties, bringing the total number of counties in Maridi to 5. State officials say the new counties meet all the criteria for creating counties according to the 2009 Local Government Act. Gift Friday has more for VOA from Juba.
In Maridi State today, this order has been read, which is marking the creation of the three new counties in Maridi State. That is Nabanga County, Mambe County, and Kozi County as three new created counties. Maridi is now having 5 counties altogether.
That's Maridi State Information Minister Peter Saki reading the order creating the new counties in front of chiefs, women activists, church leaders, youth, and other government officials yesterday afternoon at the County Council main hall in Maridi. Saki says Governor Mande acted in accordance with the law.
All those three counties, they have these local resources whereby it needs only a kind of proper planning for it to be developed. In Mambe Payam, we have bamboo, we have this timber, we have some minerals there, which for one of those counties also is having sticks available there. The government of Maridi State have freely chosen those three places whereby at least it has got some resources whereby it will help in the development.
Saki says state leaders will not create any more counties and will focus on developing the existing 5 counties. Stephen Kuyu, a resident of Oloboma in the newly created Mambe County, says he believes Maridi will develop faster than other states.
By creating these counties, the services like opening of secondary schools, other institutions, and the health services will a bit be broader than before. So even opening of the roads to these areas and the community will just feel that the services, the government has come closer to them.
Kuyu said Maridi citizens who live in the diaspora should join hands in developing the newly created counties.
I'm urging all our people who are outside so that they can give their hands, whether it's in Australia or in America, so that we can develop our areas. So we will not only rely that government will provide everything.
Maridi resident Aisha Simon is grateful for the creation of the new counties.
We thank the government of South Sudan to stand firm with us for giving us new counties. We are really happy. We are going to benefit by getting jobs, creating more jobs to the people.
Late last month, South Sudan's Council of States granted state governors the power to create up to 12 new counties, so long as they meet the criteria as stipulated in the 2009 Local Government Act. For VOA News, I'm Gift Friday in Juba.
From Juba, we move to Kenya, where Kenyan police say they have foiled a terrorist plot by a group believed to have links to the Islamic State. The group was allegedly planning a large-scale attack intended to kill innocent Kenyans. Suspects include medical experts who police say were planning to launch an attack using biological agent Antrak. From Nairobi, VOA's Jill Craig reports.
Kenyan police have arrested medical intern Mohamed Abdi Ali, his wife, and her friend for their alleged involvement in an East African terror network. Police say other accomplices, including two medical interns, are on the run. George Musamali is a security analyst for East and Central Africa.
I believe that we've upped our game in terms of collection of intelligence because this was a very, very big breakthrough on the part of the intelligence agencies in Kenya. This includes the National Intelligence Services, the Kenya Police, and also people from the military intelligence. It shows that right now the intelligence units are working together and they're well coordinated.
Police say the foiled plot included plans for a biological terror attack using anthrax, an infectious bacteria that spreads rapidly once spores get into the body. They say the attack, planned for April 29th, was to be on a similar scale to the Westgate Mall assault of September 2013, in which 67 people were killed. That attack was carried out by the Somalia-based Al-Qaeda-linked group Al-Shabaab. Police released the names and photos of all five suspects on Twitter. They say the group was radicalizing and recruiting university students and other Kenyan youth, even encouraging them to join terror groups in Libya and Syria. And the alleged involvement of Islamic State with this group is a concern, according to Musa Mali.
Clearly, it shows the IS now wants to be a part of the play in East and Central Africa. And I think this is something that should worry us very much.
Warning that the two suspects at large are armed and dangerous, Kenyan police are offering 2 million Kenyan shillings, almost $20,000, for information leading to their arrest. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, John. The top UN representative in South Sudan is calling on the factions of both President Salva Kiir and First Vice President Riek Machar in the transitional government of national unity to move quickly and resolve disagreements over the number of states in the country and the integration of police forces from the two sides. UNMISS Chief Ellen Margaret Loy is also urging South Sudan leaders to present clear policies if they want to attract financial aid from the international community. Loy told reporters in Juba today that the UN and the international community eagerly await the completion of the transitional government of national unity to speed establishment of all institutions outlined in the peace deal. While residents say although the conflict has ended and a transitional unity government is in place, they still do not see the dividends of peace. Residents charge that unarmed civilians accused of being SPLA-IO fighters or sympathizers are still being killed by government forces. At least four civilians have been shot dead by suspected SPLA soldiers in Wau since First Vice President Machar returned to Juba last week. Citizens across Wau say they were glad to see the former leader return to Juba, hoping his arrival would signal the end of insecurity. But President Coletta John says that's not happened, adding he's witnessed killings since Machar's arrival. And finally, Maridi State Governor Africana Munde has created three new counties, bringing the total number of counties in the newly created state to five. State officials say they've met all the criteria for creating new counties according to the 2009 Local Government Act. The new counties were announced yesterday. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
That's our show for this Wednesday. We'll now leave you with the song Kwenikel by Kang JJ. We have been listening to Kang JJ singing in his Nuer native language about peace. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.